This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
Hey, it's Gemma Spegg, host of the Open Mind Original podcast, Mantra. Every Monday, I'll bring you a new mantra, a simple yet powerful phrase to help you clear your mind and stay grounded amidst the chaos. I'll also share some personal stories, journal prompts, and a weekly challenge to bring each mantra to life. Follow and listen to Mantra, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with Open Mind Studios, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Jet lag's real. I think this was a much easier than London, just because we have time. We had time on the way over, we have time on the way back, so I think everybody's pretty much acclimated by now. That was the hardest part of London, was it being so quick. So getting to have that time, and then also getting two off days back. So the difference with London was we played two games, we lost three off days, so it made kind of the rest of the season a little bit of a challenge. For this one, we actually gained two off days for the rest of the year. So
that was Ian Happ talking to us earlier this week. If you missed it, you can go to the Odyssey app, hit that rewind feature ahead of the Cubs game, which you can hear tonight on The Score. That's right. The Cubs play the Arizona Diamondbacks in the domestic opener. Check that out at 8:45 on the Cubs radio network with Southwest Airlines. Joining us now on the Circus Sports Illinois hotline of MLB Network, the host of MLB Central, celebrating its 10-year anniversary. You catch it at 9 a.m. It is Mark DeRosa. D-Ro, nice to talk to you.
Nice to talk to you guys. Happy opening day.
And you're in front of a live studio audience, if you will, because we are live here from Wings and Rings on the South Side, and the Sox fans give you a nice round of applause. So I think that's saying something. Everybody's happy about the beginning of the season.
Everybody loves the clean slate. We got energy. Who knows what's going to happen? It's a marathon, not a sprint. Kind of brings you back to your youth days, playing catch with dad. So, yeah, opening day always fires me up.
All right, so it's opening day. You mentioned it's a marathon, not a sprint. For some of us, feeling like a slog, though, because we don't know really what to expect for these White Sox. What are your thoughts on what they're trying to do here with this reset, this rebuild, whatever you want to call it? Certainly, the goal, number one, is to win more games than last year, but what do you want to see out of the White Sox to understand that they are, in fact, rebuilding and doing it well?
Well, I would trust in what – I loved Garrett Crochet on the mound for the White Sox, obviously one of the best starters in the game, but I love what Chris Getz was able to bring back in that trade. I had a chance to actually do my spring training previews in the White Sox. We're one of the teams that I got a chance to meet with in Glendale. That's what jumps off of you. I hate to say it, it's not the big league club. They are in a complete rebuild. But some of the talented young guys that were walking by me, the Montgomerys, the Kyle Teals, the Colson Montgomerys, just kind of oozing. There's two big left-handed arms, Noah Schultz and Hagen Smith and those guys. So there's a lot to like what's on the horizon. It's like you said, it's going to be a grind this year to get through the American League with the White Sox roster. I think you're seeing a lot of young guys that are going to get a chance to get some dirt in their cleats, get some good big league time, and then you're seeing a couple veterans try and give veteran leadership, but on the flip side, probably playing for selfish reasons and try and get out of there at the trade deadline and bring the White Sox back something in return.
Well, I'm glad you brought up Garrett Crochet. I don't know if Sox fans necessarily are, but I saw that the MLB Network crew was really bullish on what he can do. A lot of people picking him as the favorite for American League Cy Young. How do you feel about his chances for that and what the Central crew thinks could happen this season just overall in the league?
Yeah, I'm bullish on it. I really am. I watched him at length last year. I go back to a start he had June 13th in Seattle. I was sitting up late at night, and he punched out 13, and he made it look easy. It was 98 top of the zone, that nasty cutter that he's brought into vogue with his arsenal. And it was pretty easy to see that this guy had taken kind of that next step to unhittable. You watch a guy like Tarek Skubal go through and win a unanimous AL Cy Young. I wouldn't be shocked if Garrett stays healthy with that Red Sox team behind him if he's staring down a potential Cy Young as well. So when we were at the winter meetings, everyone was focused on Soto, and I get it, $765 million. But Crochet would have been the belle of the ball for me in those hotel rooms.
Mark, when you look at the National League Central, certainly the expectations are that the Cubs will be the front runner, even though the Brewers have proven that just because the Cubs buy a more expensive roster doesn't mean that they're necessarily the best team. Why is this year different, or is this year different for the Cubs and what we should expect from them? Is this the year that they do punch their ticket by winning the NL Central crown?
Yeah, I'm going to pick them to win the NL Central. It has to be the year, right? Or I think you're going to see some changes. With some of the front office personnel and some of the things that have gone on there. It's time. You bring in a Kyle Tucker. I would have liked for them to have kept Cody Bellinger with Kyle Tucker and see what that looks like. I don't know why that wasn't feasible or within the budget, but you bring in a superstar like him. He's a quiet superstar. He's not going to lead being a vocal guy. I had him on the roster with Team USA. Sneaky, funny. All the boys seem to love him, but, I mean, he's one of the top most talented, tools-out guys in the game. And I like their rotation. I woke up at 5:50 to watch those games in Tokyo, and I was locked in, and everyone was enamored with what the Dodgers did, and I get it. No Mookie, no Freddie, and they still went in there and won two straight games. But Imanaga was throwing the heck out of the ball when he came out of that game. I don't even know. Did he? I don't think he gave up a hit when he came out of that game. Maybe
he did not give up a hit. Yeah, he didn't give up a hit.
I didn't think
he
did.
Correct.
So to watch him go and reestablish himself after winning over the Wrigley faithful last year. I love Justin Steele. He doesn't hit too many barrels. Jameson Taillon takes the next step forward. Matt Boyd had a great postseason start for the Guardians last year. On paper, this should be a division the Cubs win.
Yeah, I think that's how a lot of people feel, at least going in. Two games against the Dodgers overseas will humble you. But I was saying to Marshall, we've used this analogy, D-Row. It's like the wealthy where you're in a gated neighborhood and the Dodgers are on their own private island. You know, I feel like that's the gap between the Dodgers and maybe not the Yankees and the Mets, for example, but the rest of the league. How do you describe trying to watch those games, seeing what you're seeing, which is don't get too high on the Dodgers maybe, or don't get too low on the Cubs after two games, but also knowing what they do bring to the league this season in L.A.?
Yeah, I'm usually, whenever somebody says, give me this Team X versus the field, I'll take the field. But give me the Dodgers versus the field this year. And the reason I say that, I just think the depth of what they do from a pitching standpoint, that's the thing. They have three of the top five players, position player-wise, in the game. But I look at the pitching and what they can roll out. And – If guys get hurt, who steps in their place? It's not a huge fall off. And then they figured out all these different shapes and arsenals coming out of the bullpen. It just seems like it's a conveyor belt of just nasty stuff. Andrew Friedman and his guys have kind of figured it out. And I think when the dust settles here, it could be we're looking at Dave Roberts as like one of the greatest managers of all time, because it's just kind of got that winning formula right now where you can kind of interchangeable parts with some of the guys.
Mark, who do you think has the best shot of stopping the Dodgers? I mean, you said you take the Dodgers over the field. Who in that field do you feel like has the best shot of being an alternate World Series winner this season?
Yeah, I think there's certainly a couple teams in it. The National League is in my opinion just way stronger than the American League. American League, you could pretty much flip a coin and anybody could get hot there. I don't think there's one front runner on paper. I think when you look at the National League, I mean, certainly the Philadelphia Phillies are on the clock. They're not getting any younger. The Real Mutos and Schwarbers and Ranger Suarez are all going to be free agents at the end of the year, so they're going to want to do big things. They're a team that could stop them. If the Braves are healthy, they can certainly stop them. The Mets, they get their rotation right. The Diamondbacks. So I do believe that there is about five or six teams with a puncher's chance in the National League against the Dodgers.
We are talking to Mark DeRosa of MLB Network, the former major leaguer, as you know, celebrating 10 years of MLB Central on MLB Network, starting at 9 a.m. for us local time. And I think that is cool that it is the 10-year anniversary of the show. I feel like it started out so strong, but it's come a long way even then since. I feel like you and Lauren and Matt always find your groove and the guests that you have come on. What do you like about doing the show and just beginning the day with baseball the way you guys do?
First off, I love the two people that I work with. I mean, Lauren is, I think, the best in the business. She's out in San Francisco today. She's doing March Madness. So her ability to kind of bounce around to different sports and kill it the way she does is fantastic. Robert's got such quick wit and has been doing it for so long. But what I love about it is we truly get to build just an awesome morning show that I would want to pour a cup of coffee and watch. And we try and give the guys a safe space, the players a safe space to come on and be themselves and ask some, you know, not crazy hard-hitting baseball questions, have a little fun with them. And then we do the in-depth analysis and breakdowns of the game. So I tried to build a show that I would watch as a former player. And I hope that, you know, we've accomplished that.
I would say so, absolutely. Who's been, even last year, if you go back to last season, what was one of your favorite interviews or just bits that you and Robert Flores and Lauren Chahadi did?
You know, it's funny. We love going on the road. I mean, certainly the London series for me was, anybody who hasn't been there, when we go back as in Major League Baseball, and I know they'll probably go back next year, it should be a bucket list thing. That place was energetic. I love that. And then I love the guys coming into the studio. We've had a few guys come into the studio last year. Brent Rooker from the Athletics comes to mind. Christian Walker, who's now with the Houston Astros, was a fantastic guest. And I have a young son, 15 years old. I know the youth space is exploding with baseball. So I love when those guys come in and they're able to kind of give a little wisdom to the kid at home, because I know if I was sitting watching in the 80s or early 90s and Don Mattingly came on and said, hey, try this, I would have ran outside and you know, started whacking baseballs.
So we're looking at the start of this season, and I know everybody kind of looks at the Dodgers as that team to watch because they are the Dodgers, the reigning World Series champs. They have Shohei Ohtani. There's so many other guys. When you look at superstars today in Major League Baseball, who's Mark DeRosa's favorite player to watch?
Oof. You know, it's funny. Doing the Team USA thing, I kind of got a few favorites, right? Like, obviously having Bobby Witt on that team and watching him kind of follow Mike Trout, Mookie Betts around and see how the superstars go about their day. And then watching him go back to Kansas City and hit 330 and do all the special things he did was fun to watch. The guy I walked out of spring training this year going, oh, my God, I had never been in his presence, was Elly De La Cruz from Cincinnati.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He
what,
has
what do you think
chance.
About that team?
He had. I think, listen, I love the Terry Francona addition. I think it's going to make them 5 to 6 games better than they were going to be without him. I think it's a young team that has to learn how to win for me. I'm not as in love. I think they're a lot of people's sexy pick to get hot. I see them as third in that division in the NL Central behind the Cubs and Brewers. I don't think the Brewers get enough respect. Going through Maryvale, talking to Christian Yelich and Churio and William Contreras and Freddie Peralta, and then they're going to have Brandon Woodruff at some point. They figure it out. They always figure out a way to be effective. So, yeah, I think Cincinnati falls in that third slot.
What were you going to say about Elly De La Cruz? I know you were waxing poetic and we stopped you for a second.
I'm enamored with body movements and athleticism and his sprint speed and all the tools. It's one thing to have all the tools. It's another thing to be able to bring them to game time. And he consistently does it. So when he fully understands how pitchers are trying to attack him, when he fully dials in on defense every pitch, I think he's an MVP waiting to happen.
I also want to ask you, you mentioned the Cubs as far as liking the rotation and talking about what you saw out of how they're going to compete in the Central. We know the Brewers have been the standard bearer in the division for many years now. You mentioned earlier, just in passing, why you didn't think they were able to do more when it came to acquiring more offense in addition to Kyle Tucker. How do you see this Cubs team just when you consider how they shape up against the rest of baseball? I know you like them in this division, but even after that, or just how you compare them with other teams that you know are of that higher level?
Yeah, I like the Cubs. I think they throw two or three guys out on the mound that could win a postseason game. I really do. I think they came in with a more established bullpen this year. Bringing over a guy like Ryan Pressly is certainly going to help. He's been in big moments. He's pitched in the biggest situations. From an offensive standpoint, I love a lot of the guys in that lineup. It's just they got to figure out a way to be a little bit more dynamic. And I think that starts with, if you ask me, leaving Sloan Park, who's the guy that kind of jumped off the map at me in Cubs camp, and it was PCA. P. Crow Armstrong, just being around him, watching him go about his craft. He's twitchy. He hits the ball a heck of a lot harder than I thought he did. Defensively, he's one of the best in the game. If he takes a massive step for them and kind of ignites them, the Dansbys, Nikos, Ian Happs, you know what you're getting out of them. I'd like to see Dansby hit for a little bit more average this year. But you know what you're getting with Happer and Horner, and Michael Bush had a nice rookie year. So I think there's a lot to like. I just think you need one or two guys to play above their pay grade, and PCA would certainly be that guy. And Tuck, once it warms up, is going to be a major force for them. So, yeah, I'm in on the Cubs.
You paint a beautiful picture, Mark DeRosa. Thank you so much for joining us today on the Score Midday Show.
No, thanks for having me.
Mark DeRosa, 10 years with MLB Central on MLB Network, weekdays at 9 a.m. on MLB. I do love that show. It was great to have D-Row on joining us on the Circa Sports Illinois Hotline. Coming up next on The Score, as we continue our big show from the South Side, we are at Wings and Rings on Halsted as we get ready for opening day here, and our crew is here. I know I see some familiar Sox faces. They've already started. We talked to a former Score guy who's doing play-by-play for the other team. Wayne Randazzo joins us next here on The Score.
The Score Midday Show, 10 to 2 on 670 The Score.
It's going to be exciting. You know, just a normal opening day for me. You know, it's where it really, you know, all started. So just happened to be on the other side this time. But I'm excited. I'm excited to see the fans. I'm excited to be back home. I'm just going to enjoy it.
How much different do you feel this time this year versus this time last year?
Overall? I'm really aware this time. You know, I really know what's going on. I really know about the body. I really know, I'm right where my feet at. So, very thankful and, just a blessing to be right here today.
You know those voices. I know you know those voices. Tim Anderson and Scott Merkin. That was from earlier today. And Marshall, we have an Angels lineup that's out.
We do. We have lineups for everybody that plays before 7 p.m. Let's say
we got the Sox lineup too.
So Tim Anderson actually in this lineup playing second base and batting fifth behind Jorge Soler. And he's batting cleanup. And Mike Trout, in case you were wondering, he is in the lineup batting third.
An amazing lineup when you consider Tim Anderson and Jorge Soler. And that's kind of why we are having our next guest on. It's always good to hear from him as well. Joining us on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline is the former score guy and play-by-play man for the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim and Friday Night Baseball on Apple TV+. I only said it that way on purpose because he's official. Wayne Randazzo, good to see you. Well, hear you anyway.
Well, it would be good. It would be great to see you guys, but good to hear you anyway. And it's opening day. You know, it's a great day.
We'll see you later, but we're the ones seeing you. You just aren't seeing us in return. It's wild that the Angels of all teams open up against the White Sox here on the South Side. When you consider how many familiar names there are, we mentioned Tim Anderson, a big redemption tour for him. When I consider pairing up with Ron Washington and what that partnership could bring for him, Yoan Moncada. Not in the lineup today, but we know he's a part of this team as well. A lot of familiar faces. Kyle Hendricks on the team. Jorge Soler. What can you tell us about the collection of this group when it comes to what we're going to see? If you know Chicago baseball, you know a lot of this team.
Yeah, you did. When the Angels just signed Naperville's own Nicky Lopez a couple days ago, too, so he's here also. It's certainly a collection of some former Chicago stars here. And, you know, for Tim Anderson, it's an emotional day. I mean, he's able to make the big league team. He's able to be in the opening day lineup, and he's able to play on the South Side against his former team. So it's an important day for Tim. He's worked hard. Ron Washington, basically, you leave your reputation at the door. He doesn't care. He just wants to see how you perform on that day. He wants to put you through the drills. He wants to see how your work ethic is. He wants to make sure you're there at 6 in the morning like everybody else. And if you are and you're doing what you're supposed to do, then you're good in Ron Washington's book. And you know, both Anderson and Moncada were brought in here to revive their careers. And Anderson will have the first opportunity today at second base. He's had a good spring. And Moncada's been in and out from a health standpoint, but he's healthy enough to be on the roster. And I'm sure you'll see him at some point this weekend, too.
Yeah, the report I read said that he's will obviously be on the roster, but might not be in the lineup until Saturday, which is, I'm sure, fine compared to not being able to make it the trip with the team here to Chicago. Wayne, I want to ask you about Tim Anderson specifically. I mean, we knew he had signed with the Angels, and we didn't know how that was going to shake out. But as you said, for him to be in the opening day lineup, that's a big step for him. I know he's playing second base. Where else might we see him as far as the field goes?
I played shortstop the other day, and he looked fine. You know, he's still able to handle that position. They have Kevin Newman at shortstop today. You know, Zach Neto is their primary shortstop. He's starting the year on the IL, but he shouldn't be out for very long. Neto's the kind of guy who plays every day and really put up all-star-like numbers last year. He had a great season, hit 23 homers. He stole 30 bases, and he's a very good defensive shortstop. So that's his position, but they want to work Anderson in at second base. And until they have to make a roster move when Neto comes back, you know, it's kind of an open audition for who can be on the roster. They'll move some parts around. They'd like to have the depth because both Moncada and Luis Renjifo, who are the two third basemen, have had injury concerns in the past. So I think Anderson can keep himself on the roster if he performs well here in the first few weeks. And I don't think they question his defense at all. I think he'll be very good at second base.
Yeah, I agree with that, Wayne. I think especially him partnering with Ron Washington, who's the infield expert, the infield guru. I always liked the idea of those two working together, so it is nice to see. For me, it's the concern about Anderson's bat. You know, that was an issue here toward the end of his time here in Chicago, was whether or not he was going to have that power that he had during the years where he was earning the batting title, for example. Right center, I feel like, is his happy place on a home run. What are you looking for when it comes to trying to figure out if he's got any power left to really, you know, stay on a big league roster?
Yeah, it's a good question. You know, certainly he didn't show much 2 years ago, his last year with the White Sox, and last year basically nothing with Miami. So there will need to be some extra base hits in that bat. And he had a good spring. He was able to spray the ball all over the field. He still looks to go to the opposite field a lot, but he was barreling up the ball a little bit more. He did hit a home run in spring training. So I don't know if the Angels need him to hit home runs necessarily, but you know, some driving of the ball would be good, and they'll take singles and doubles from Tim Anderson as long as he performs defensively. He's still fast. He's still got a great arm, and he's hungry to show that he can still play this game at a high level. You know, I talked to him the other day. He's been humbled by what's happened to him over the last couple of years, and he's ready to take on everybody. And he feels that there are a lot of people rooting for him across Major League Baseball, and I'm sure that's true after what he was doing as a White Sox player and being able to win the batting title and having that home run in Iowa, the Field of Dreams game. I mean, he was on his way to becoming a face of the game, and I think he at least wants to show that he can still be a respectable player.
When you look at this game, this series, I know coming in, it's not like people are picking the White Sox or the Angels to win their respective divisions. Where do you see, as far as the Angels and the White Sox, obviously having been here as a part of the Score, and where they are in baseball's kind of pecking order, if you will, to start the season? And what do you see as their outlooks this season?
Well, I think in the Angels' case, you know, they're not getting a ton of respect nationally, but I think they're putting together a better roster than what they had last year. They have Kenley Jansen now closing games behind Ben Joyce, who has just got a ridiculous fastball, hit 105 miles an hour a few times last year, and he'll be the eighth inning guy ahead of Jansen. Yusei Kikuchi pitching today, had a great finish to the season last year in Houston. He's the opening day starter. They brought in Kyle Hendricks, who they believe they can get back to looking similar to how he did at least a couple of years ago when he was pitching well for the Cubs. So they've added a lot of veterans, and they have Mike Trout. And Trout has looked great in spring, and he's taking the right field well. The key to Trout's life is to be on the field. He's got to play 140 games, and if he can do that, I think the Angels can find themselves in the mix as far as a wide-open American League West. I mean, the Astros won the division last year with 88 wins, and who's to say they'll even get close to that number this year? Texas, Seattle, these are all teams that have a lot of flaws. The A's too, so I think the Angels believe that they can find themselves in the conversation for the division if they stay healthy and if things go right. They don't tend to get a lot of breaks, but if they do get a few go their way this year, then I think they believe they can be a team to look out for.
Well, Wayne, one of the things that I was impressed by, at least when it came to the Angels, is they still weren't afraid to sign veterans, like veteran names. You know, obviously we know a few more just because of the familiarity with the former Cubs and the former White Sox on the roster, but I don't know if that's something where Ron Washington's opinion does at least get taken into account when it comes to his willingness to work with people, or maybe it's the free agents and the veterans willingness to work with a guy like Wash. But it is nice to see when a lot of teams don't want to sign players because guys like that are more expensive. They've got a resume. They've got big experience to their big league careers.
Well, I'll add Orange County to that list too. You know, it's a nice place to play baseball every single day. You know that there's not going to be any problems as far as weather is concerned there. So that helps the veterans. You know, Travis d'Arnaud is another, not a Chicago connection, but certainly a veteran player who's won a World Series, who will be a very nice backup catcher for Logan Ohapi, who's becoming one of the better offensive catchers in baseball. And d'Arnaud's presence, the way that he was catching in Atlanta when Ron Washington was there, when Perry Manassian was there, the general manager, it's a guy that they felt like they really needed, and they signed him pretty quickly during the offseason. You know, even from a coaching standpoint, another Chicago guy, Sal Fasano, has come in here. He was the running all the game plans in Atlanta. The Travis d'Arnaud feels like it's a huge addition to the Angels to have Sal Fasano here helping out with the strategies and game planning for these games. So they think that they have a lot of pieces that work here. And, the veterans help. Wash certainly likes having guys around who can play the game, who have shown that they know the fundamentals. The game doesn't speed up on these guys. So those are the types of players he wanted to surround this younger core with.
Veteran players, a veteran manager, and an old-school manager in Ron Washington. We were taken back with some of the rules that he's put out here. You got a ban on cell phones in the clubhouse. Wayne, is this an old school approach with new school players, or because it's such a veteran laden team, is this taken to pretty well by the players?
You know, the young players have bought in as well as anybody. You know, I think that these guys really, the Angels haven't been to the playoffs in 10 years, and they really haven't been close either. It's been a while, and they want to be the guys that break this streak and get to the postseason. They love Wash. Certainly anything Mike Trout says they will do, because Trout is a sure first ballot Hall of Famer as we stand right now. It's something that they've bought into because they believe in the guys around them and in the success that they want to have. So it hasn't. Nobody has even turned a weird eye to it. It has been completely well received. They like it. They like being able to communicate with each other. They want to have the camaraderie in the clubhouse. And, you know, they're not throwing their phones in a locker and never seeing them again. They can take a call outside or send a text to whomever. And, you know, it's just as far as going up and communicating with each other that they'll ding each other for a fine. But it's something that Wash did in Texas, you know, 10, 12 years ago. Certainly had a lot of success there, and the veteran players on that team helped enforce whatever rules Ron Washington wanted to have. So the success has been there, and they believe that they have the pieces in place to at least get the most out of these guys to try to compete this year.
And Wayne, I know that you travel the league with Apple TV Plus. You've got one of the Friday night game packages. So who stands out to you this year when it comes to just games you're looking forward to, or maybe a team you really want to see?
Well, you know, the headlining games, we have the Yankees and Dodgers this year again. We have the Mets playing the Dodgers as well. You know, it's always fun to go to San Diego. We have Mariners Padres in May, and I think that's going to be kind of an under-the-radar good series between two teams that both want to make their mark in their divisions. You know, anytime you go to Atlanta, you're going to see good baseball there with the Braves. You know, we have a Mets-Phillies game on the schedule. So we have a lot of good ones. You know, the National League is kind of the powerhouse league this year. You know, you look at the potential world champions, and it's hard to find one in the American League. Some teams are going to have to emerge, Boston, maybe Baltimore, but there's not a clear favorite in the American League. Meanwhile, in the National League, there are a handful of teams that you feel like can win the World Series. So it's always good to travel around with Apple, and the Friday night games are fun to do. I think we're doing Cubs-Cardinals on the 4th of July at Wrigley, so I'm definitely putting that one on my calendar.
Absolutely. Wayne Randazzo, thank you for taking the time. Have a great call for the Angels broadcast today. Happy opening day.
All right. Thank you. You too.
Wayne Randazzo, play-by-play announcer for the Angels and Friday Night Baseball on Apple TV+. We have had a lot of baseball talk, Marshall.
Yeah. You ready to switch it up? Cross it up, if you will?
Oh, yeah. Cross it up is a great way to put it. How would you describe the level of beef between the celebrity and the actual fire that's coming up?
Wagyu beef? Is that a good description?
That is the highest of the top notches.
It's high-level beef that we're about to be discussing.
Typically, we stay away from Stephen A. and the LeBron James legacy talk. But when it comes to you in this manner, we have to address it with the Lakers in town. Lake Show next on The Score.
The Score Midday Show, 10 to 2 on 670 The Score.
Luka with two for the win. Tipped up and in. Will it count? LeBron James at the buzzer. He says rack it up.
So the good news is the Lakers are coming here off of a back-to-back. And by the way, speaking of that Bulls and Lakers game, we have a couple of programming notes for you, because everything is different because we have multiple sports on because it's April. So number one, Bulls host the Lakers tonight at United Center. Coverage begins at 6:45 on News Radio WBBM, 780 AM. So the Bulls and Lakers on 780 WBBM. I will fill in for Alyssa Bergamini. Chuck Swirsky and Bill Winnington and the crew will be there. And then also tonight, the Cubs, as you know, resume their regular season tonight against the Diamondbacks. Pre-game coverage will begin at 8:35 p.m. First pitch at 9:10. So 8:35 for pregame. First pitch at 9:10 on the Southwest Airlines Cubs radio network. So the good news, Marshall, is that the Lakers are coming off of a back-to-back.
What's the bad news?
The bad news is LeBron James at the buzzer for the win.
I don't think that's bad news. It means LeBron's tired. They had to fully exert themselves to win that game against Indiana on the road. I think more good news is The Bulls didn't play last night, so they are the proverbial team lying in wait, mm-hmm. playing a home mm-hmm. game mm-hmm. with a team coming off their road trip or on their road trip still. And now they have a chance to back up what they did over the weekend and beat the Lakers twice in the matter of three games.
But that's not even why we're talking about LeBron. It's not the fact that the Lakers are here. It's not the fact that the Bulls beat them over the weekend, scoring 146 points.
There's more?
But wait, there's more. So we knew when LeBron was on Pat McAfee for an hour that we were going to watch it, that we were going to pay attention, check it out, see what we could see. LeBron talked about his viral confrontation with Stephen A. Smith. He let it rip.
I didn't have that on my bingo card, by the way. I thought they would avoid that since he was on an ESPN property.
Yeah, where Stephen A. Smith basically owns the network now in some way, shape, or form. So let's hear what he said.
That feels like a moment that had been brewing for a long time.
He's like on a Taylor Swift tour run right now.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we're watching it. Yep. We're all seeing mm-hmm. it.
Oh, yeah.
You're seeing it as well.
It started off with, I didn't want to address it.
Yeah, sure.
I didn't want to address it. I wasn't going to address it. But since the video came out, I feel the need to address
it. Yeah, well, you what the talk about it?
Are you kidding me? If there's one person that couldn't wait to the video to drop so you could address it, it's your ass. Like, seriously, he completely, like, missed the whole point. The whole point. Never would I ever not allow people to talk about the sport, criticize players about what they do on the court. That is your job, mm-hmm. to criticize or to, you know, be in a position where, okay, if a guy's not performing, you know, that is all part of the game. That's all part of the game. But when you take it and you get personal with it, it's my job to not only protect my damn household, but protect the players. You know, and I think a lot of the media, including him, and I know he's gonna be happy as hell. He's gonna be smiling from ear to ear when he hears me talking about it again. Oh my God, he's gonna get home and grab some ice cream out of the freezer and sit in his chair and his tidy whities on the couch.
I hope at some point you two get a chance.
Yeah, relax, like seriously.
Okay, so this was in response to LeBron confronting Stephen A. at a game because Stephen A. had talked about how Bronny should be in the G League his rookie year.
Yes.
So that's how this started.
Which is correct. Bronny should be in the G League, and he has been in the G League. He just dropped 39 points the other day in the G League.
That he did. Mr. James, I'm sorry, but Bronny James should be in the G League. It makes sense.
The only thing that he was wrong about, LeBron, was the tidy whities part. Because Stephen A. responded in kind, not even on ES. I think he has responded on First Take since, but on his own show, the Stephen A. Smith Show. You might want to listen to what he has to say.
My issue is with LeBron James, and I just want to say for the record, LeBron James is full of it, and in this particular instance, as it pertains to his son, he is a liar. And he went on national television today and he lied again. You see, when he approached me while I was sitting courtside at that game against the New York Knicks, when he rolled up on me, I didn't know he was going to roll up on me. I had no idea. But when he said what he had to say, I was in no position to give any kind of retort without making a scene. It was during the third quarter. It was fresh out of a timeout. It was him walking to the basketball court. It was on national television. The cameras were rolling. And had I done something, what do y'all want me to do? You want me to act? You want this to be a reincarnation of Chris Rock and Will Smith? And let me state for the record that while we bring up that, let me assure you, it wouldn't have gone down like that. I would have gotten my ass kicked because had that man put his hands on me, I would have immediately swung on him. Immediately. That I'm not going to tolerate. But I knew he wasn't going to do something like that. There was no fear in my mind about it. It was shock because as I have repeatedly stated, I was not talking about his son. I was talking about him. And whether it's the video that you saw him a couple of days later after that incident when he was talking to Richard Jefferson, my colleague at ESPN, before an ABC game in Boston when it got blown out that night by the Celtics, or in the aftermath of it, including Pat McAfee's show, when he talked about me getting personal and taking it beyond basketball, I'm getting to a point where I'm getting very annoyed at people who cover the game of basketball, who cover professional sports, pundits out there, including him, his inner circle, his family members, and everybody else included. When are y'all going to ask him or hold him accountable for the truth? I have not been talking about Bronny James. I have not, as LeBron James accused me of doing to my face, been on his son. I clapped back at D-Wade and Melo, two brothers I love dearly, when they were talking about this, even though 99% of the stuff they said was right. It was not clapping back at his son. Your second round pick, 55th overall, there's been plenty of second round picks that have to work their way up through the ranks before getting to the pro level. Me pointing that out about his son and talking about how his son has been pushed to the forefront, thereby put in a line of fire for folks in the media to come at him, is not denigrating his son. It's simply highlighting what we all knew, which is that he's not ready yet. But based on what we've seen from Bronny recently, there are indications that he will be. And as LeBron James pointed out on the Pat McAfee show today, it's probably sooner than later because his growth and his maturation from just a year ago has happened by leaps and bounds.
Is that it?
Man.
I didn't quite know, because the Stephen A. dramatic pause leads you to want something else.
That's why he makes all the money he makes for his network, is because he has you on the edge of your seat. What's he going to say now?
The Stephen A. dramatic pause.
Smith.
Okay.
So where do you stand on the beef? What side are you on the beef?
I was fortunate enough to pick it up at the end, and I saw the video of Stephen A. appearing to box in slow motion with a trainer.
Yeah, that was what I sent you on Instagram. Kev on Stage, who's a hilarious comedian, he made a video and he said, "I would put hands on him. I would swing on him," and then he showed the Stephen A. Smith training, and it was not all that impressive.
Listen, everybody needs to move and work out, but I don't know that fight, if it goes down.
No, but he said LeBron will whoop his tail. That's what he said.
Yeah, but still.
But he is getting a lot of play out of this.
I don't even know that it would be even that ridiculous.
He is getting a lot of play out of this.
The fact that we never talk about stuff like this, because typically it's just your run-of-the-mill first take-ish thing, tells you to the level that this has gotten.
Well, LeBron is on national TV talking about it. That's the difference here, is LeBron has responded and kept it alive. Because if LeBron doesn't say anything, no one's talking about it anymore. It's over and done with.
Right, because Stephen A. talking isn't novel. What's novel is LeBron addressing it.
Yes.
So one thing this tells me is this the best indicator that he might be retiring after this?
Why do you think that?
Because he's not afraid to say stuff anymore. He's not biting his tongue.
I think he's just been in the league enough, and he's a billionaire now, and he understands billionaires can get away with anything. He's looking around. He's checking the room temperature, if you will.
I'm okay with it if that's the case. In this instance, I'm okay with it. We have some we'll play more of what LeBron said, because there are a couple of pieces of audio later in the show.
Not Stephen A. Smith related.
No, that deserves some attention, so we will do that. But next, you knew it was going to happen. This is White Sox opening day. We talked to him last year on this day at Wings and Rings, so we will do it again. AJ Pierzynski, the man, joins us from the Foul Territory show next to talk Sox and more on The Score.